Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by these great companies that are giving us money to let you listen to their stuff.
Bullshit, Kyle. We make this show. We make this show. You and me. Two Bulls in a China Shop is brought to you by us.
Someone's got to pay the bills, Dan, because it's not our trading.
All right, roll them.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Well, hello and welcome, everybody. Get your asses inside. We have another thrilling, exciting interview queued up for you today. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of financialineptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little sore. Second week of mowing my own lawn has not been fun.
Oh, and I take it you don't have a ride-on mower?
No, it is self-propelled, but that doesn't seem to make much difference.
Yeah.
Also, my wife decided to chop down every single hedge. So I had to clear all the debris out before I could even mow this morning.
The joys of home ownership. You don't even have any kids to make them do the yard work.
Like they would.
Like they would.
Kids these days.
Anyway, folks, we're so excited you're joining us today because we got here in the shop none other than Dr. Bruce Liu. How are you doing today, Dr. Bruce?
I'm doing all right. Hi, guys. Thank you for having me here. Good to be here.
Where are you located, Bruce? Are you in Shanghai or Beijing?
I'm supposed to be in New York City, but I came back to China and last September. And thanks to COVID here, I got stuck in Beijing. So right now I'm in Beijing.
Oh, man. How long have you... When were you supposed to come back?
Well, my plan was going back to New York City at the end of, the first quarter. And now, things are getting tricky here. And a lot of things going on, I'm thinking might just, stay a little bit longer. Well, all of a sudden, COVID hit Beijing as well. It's getting worse.
Doesn't sound like you have much choice.
No, not at all. And hopefully I can get back, the end of summer. That's my new plan. Fingers crossed, guys.
You think it'll be that long?
Well, a lot of things going on here. I have zero conviction how this is going to end, So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's see how this goes.
Because I think that's one of the things when China did their first lockdowns, they were pretty heavy and hard with what they did, but it seemed like they were able to loosen the restrictions sooner because they were so aggressive initially.
Well, the rumor says, and not rumor, actually, they issued a report this weekend, Shanghai is opening up gradually the middle of this month. Well, a lot of debates, how serious they are opening up and how gradual, it could be. We just don't know.
Mm.
But in Beijing, it's actually getting more serious.
Really?
And half of the city is you have to stay home. It's a semi-lockdown. You're now allowed to go to work and just stay at home. That's the message. Stay at home. Don't get into troubles. But the good thing is, you probably have seen the videos and pictures and the people in Shanghai, they couldn't get the food, at the very beginning, the lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the case so far here yet. We got enough supply. I'm not worried about that. And so that's the good side of the whole situation.
Yeah. So you should be safe then.
Yeah. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Well, Bruce, why don't you tell us a little bit about Esoterica Capital? You started that in 2019.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. The beginning of 2019, I left the firm, the hedge fund, my previous hedge fund, got a chance to do something new. And then, with the partners I have right now. And we thought, like, you know, because at the time we saw this, you know, the digital economy 5G cycle just getting started.
Mm.
Let's work on that. You know, and back then we thought about like doing another hedge fund, but then we figured out like the more exciting thing to do is actually more focusing on the retail investors. And for retail investors, you know, ETF is the best, you know, the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually get a little inspired by Kathy's, you know, arc.
To be honest. Oh, no. Poor Kathy.
Doing great now.
I have to be very honest with you guys on that one. Yeah, but I figured that's a good way to, you know, really help the retail investors, you know,
mm-hmm.
help them to invest, you know, the growth, the same themes. And the ETF is the way to go. So we set up Astarca Capital, really focusing on the ETF products, and spent a year, you know, getting the infrastructure ready. We have our own trust and getting, you know, all the service providers in line. And fortunately, you know, March 2020, we took advantage of the bottom of the market, launched the product.
Oh.
So it's been a little bit more than 2 years.
That sounds like an excellent time to jump in.
Yeah, oh, you know, wow.
Was that just luck or was that planned?
Oh, actually, that's a good story to tell. We were going to launch at the end of like February.
Mm-hmm.
But we saw like things are getting, you know, ugly, and we have our own market cycle indicators. You know, we keep using those like tools because we do use like a top down macro view to help our investment process. We did see that coming. So we want to be conservative. We wait and wait until the middle of March. If you guys remember, Fed just threw out all the tools that they can leverage within 2 weeks, you know, a time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, we felt like this is the time to get in. Then we pulled the trigger. And fortunately, I think that's a great, you're right. No, that's a great time to launch some fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Should make your 21 number or 2020 and 21 numbers look really good.
Yeah. 2020, we did great in almost 100%. I was more proud, you know, like what we did last year. Last year was tough for growth managers, if you can remember.
Yeah.
We can still put up like, you know, very healthy numbers, 20 plus number, like a percent. So, that's last year. This year is even tougher.
Right. I think this year is going to be tough for everybody though.
Yeah. Especially for growth managers, you know, you're mm-hmm. just, you know, it's precisely, it's just killing everything you do. But we'll get through this, you know. It's been like almost like half a year. It started like in November, yeah.
It should mean a lot of things go on sale for you though too, right?
Yeah, it's just, you know, man, like, this is like a decade it feels like, you know. So much, yeah. But you know, I like it. It's a challenge. That's where you grow your muscles, yeah. You can just get better.
And the fund that you launched is symbol WUGI, Woogie.
Yeah,
is that Woogie. The pronunciation?
Yeah, that's how you speak 5G in Chinese.
Oh, okay.
People call it Woogie. You know, if you say Woogie in Asia, a lot of people know what you mean.
Ah, oh, that makes sense. All right.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Why is 5G such a big deal then? I see a lot of people talking about it. But like the switch from like 3G to 4G didn't really seem to be all that, you know, life changing.
Yeah, you're right. You know, probably I need to explain this a little bit. We use 5G is to describe the whole cycle. You know, 4G is mobile internet, right?
Uh-huh.
So we just, people happen to say this is a 4G cycle, and the next 10 years, maybe 15 years, that's be 5G cycle. It's not only about the 5G technology itself. It's a lot about like all the things it enables.
Okay.
Put the cloud together, low latency. You know, you get edge computing. You got new applications. It's the whole package rather than just 5G. Okay. Yeah, that's where we are coming from, at least.
All right, that makes sense. So what are some of the companies that are in the holdings of the fund?
Right now, well, to be honest with you, right now the largest holding is cash.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, well, we took advantage of the March, you know, market came back a little bit, you know, toward the end of March. We we cut some, you know, as an ETF fund, I'm allowed to hold as much as 20% of cash. Right now, mm-hmm. we have close to 20. I think that's the right thing I did, you know, at least, you know,
oh, yeah.
I feel good for all the investors. We saw this is the end of cycle. I need to be conservative and having some like a dry powder on the sideline and to, you know, hopefully buy the dips later on. We balanced the exposure. We moved towards the large cap. If you saw the largest holdings, now we got AMD. That's the name we really like, and mm-hmm. high convictions. We got Microsoft. We got Marvell, Qualcomm, and TSMC, NVIDIA. You know, all those. You know, we did move the portfolio more towards, you know, large cap, high quality growth. I think that's mm-hmm. where you should, at this point of time, that's where you should hold your portfolio at. The assumption is, you know, even we get a recession, this is a name I feel very comfortable to hold through.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense. AMD is something that we've followed for quite some time. What do you like so much about it? Like, what's the, what makes you want to be the investor?
Okay. You know, that's a lot of things to talk about, like AMD. We like Lisa Su a lot, like a respect to her.
Mm-hmm.
She saved the company. You know, we follow the company right. since she took over the CEO role. She has done everything right, you know, and nothing spectacular. She doesn't do anything magical. We call it a boring execution. She just has been executing so well, you know, and de-risked the company at the very beginning, you know, pay down all the debts and having the new roadmap, just execute. And the product's just getting better. And also collaborate, you know, dump the global foundry and collaborate with TSMC. That's a brilliant move that helps hugely on the quality of their products. Now, you know, AMD is gradually becoming a platform, you know, a portfolio play. It's not just like a single product. Of course, now that everything is all about like how they gaining the market share in data center, you know, cloud server market. That's
right.
that's the whole thesis is all about, and this is just again they're executing so well. In the last quarter, they even revised up the growth. You know,
even
this environment, that's just not an easy thing to do, and so much, you know, visibility is so well, so good, and they, you know, voluntarily to de-risk the weakness in PC. And so I think Lisa Su has been managing the company, you know, fantastically. We just love everything they do. And this is just a start of, you know, the whole journey. And they have a long, long journey, you know, ahead, as long as, you know, semiconductor is eating the whole world. That's our motto. Not software anymore. Semi is coming to the play.
Really? So you're like software as a service, you think is on the decline?
No. Don't
okay.
Don't get me wrong. And,
I didn't think so. I was gonna. Do I need to dump my Salesforce? Is that no?
two major like investment thesis in our portfolio. One is semiconductors. It's because you have this secular growth because the semi content is increasing everywhere, right? Thanks to cloud, thanks to AI, thanks to big data, you know, everything comes down to, you know, computing. Computing needs what? Needs semi. Another pillar is just this, you know, SaaS, software as a services. And people are moving, you know, their workload to cloud. And, you know, on top of a cloud, you know, infrastructure, you build all kinds of, you know, softwares, infrastructure layers, application layers. And that's another revolution. Where we have been going through, and the companies, you know, you are familiar with the old generation, you know, Salesforce, SAP, Adobe, you know, we like new ones.
Oh, really?
You know, old ones are good, still good. You know, don't get me wrong. They're very, you know, high quality place, you know, ServiceNow, Workdays, you know, but we like the exciting place. Although, you know, in the past, like 6 months, you know, the valuation part, the multiples got just, you know, destroyed. That's a macro, like a factor. It's because the interest rates is rising and it's killing the, you know, the multiples. But the fundamentals, take Datadog, for example, and it keeps growing at very, very high speed. And, security layers, all the security names, you know, let's forget that the stock price for a second.
Right.
Their underlying business are still keep growing very well. And even the old boys like Microsoft, we like Microsoft so much because they keep reinventing themselves. And every layer on the SaaS, in this SaaS game, and you can find the influence, the impact, and the dominance of you know, Microsoft.
Right.
They have been doing so well. Who else? Snowflake, you guys probably know that as well. Expensive, yes. But, you know, underlying business, you know, the momentum is still there and keep growing. The downside is, you know, they're still quite an expensive stock. So you have to be a little bit more careful.
That's one of the reasons why I've always liked Salesforce, because it's put up like 15-20% growth every year, it seems like. Mm-hmm. Like, and they've been doing that for what, nearly a decade at least?
Yeah, exactly. I think although, you know, that's how you gauge, how you judge, you know, a good, you know, SaaS company. You have to be able to keep up, you know, keep growing like that. You know, that's, and also at the same time, growing your margins, you know. You have to have like two cylinders, you know, to justify the evaluation people give you.
Going back to AMD for a minute, do you have any, what's your feelings on Intel? Do you think Intel will be able to stem the bleeding? Because you mentioned the AMD taking server share, and that's something that Dan and I have been looking at since we started doing this podcast, was AMD eating into that lead. Intel doesn't seem like one to stay down for too long. And AMD and Intel, over the history of the two companies, seem like they kind of always flip-flopped over who was the better, who provided the better product for the cost. Do you see that cycle continuing, or do you think AMD is just a clear leader at this point?
Well, like two companies go way back. You know, if you guys remember back in like before 2008, right? That was a long time back. And at the one point, you know, AMD, sorry, I'm telling you guys a very interesting story. It might take a little bit.
No, that's fine. Please. Yeah.
Back then, you know, AMD had a similar momentum, just like they have right now. And good products, decent products, but a much cheaper price. And, you know, getting the market share from Intel. But you know, when Intel decided to kill their momentum, Intel lowered the price. So at the same time, you know, kind of like AMD messed it up. You know, they didn't use like a TSMC back then. They used the other like a foundry, and you know, they don't have the real like the technology, the manufacturing process to really support the product AMD wanted to have. So like AMD, after that, AMD almost went bankrupt. And really got into troubles. So when this time around, when Lisa Su took over the CEO role, AMD coming back with excellent products, gaining, you know, market shares, and people were suspicious. Are they gonna repeat, you know, that failure again? And, you know,
right.
And also Intel is gonna just kill them like what they did last time. This time is actually different. Like two things. First of all, AMD has been like mentioned earlier. Has been executing really well and high quality products. They are not just focusing on the low end anymore. It's used to be just they compete at the same level, the same quality of a product, but a cheaper price. This time around, they have actually better quality, you know, product out there. And that's really thanks to the foundry process, you know, provided by TSMC. Two companies really collaborating really well. Of course, you know, AMD has their own, like, you know, redesigned the architecture for their, you know, chips.
Right.
Two things together, that's really make them, like, stand out. At the same time, you know, the success of AMD also relies on, you know, kind of like Intel messes up, mostly messes up their manufacturing process. Even now, that's where their trouble is, you know, right? And that's, they try to fix it. They keep delaying it. Now the whole story is by 2025, and they think Intel is gonna, catch up with the TSMC manufacturing process. That's the biggest bet Intel is having right now. They mm-hmm. almost bet on everything on that. If they mess it up, I think they're gone.
Wow.
So this is, you know, yeah, that's in our opinions. And this is not looking good, to be honest with you, even now. They're just telling the investors, the community, a story. You just cannot, like, you know, prove they're wrong. You have to wait until 2025, you know. Say if they can make it, you know, break it. If they could, they could.
I would want to bet against them personally. They still have really good architecture. Like the designs, like even their 11 nanometer chips, I think is what they were on when AMD was releasing the 7s. Mm-hmm. We're still on par.
The problem is more with their like manufacturing process, you know.
Right.
That's something they have to fix. Mm-hmm. And the new CEO is really, really, you know, I think has done his best.
Yeah.
And using all the resources, even make this a political weapon, if you know what I mean.
Right. Trying to bring the manufacturing back to the States.
And get all the fundings from the States and from all the governments around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that's you know, himself said that, you know, like, you know.
But didn't Microsoft also work out some sort of deal with TSMC?
Well, when you see Microsoft, it's, you know, all like, actually, all the hyperscalers, you know, the cloud vendors,
uh-huh.
they all try to, you know, make their own chips, customize their own chips, so to support their workload.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Amazon did it the most.
Oh, really?
Amazon did it the most, yeah. Amazon is a... I think like almost like I forgot the number, so I have to really talk to our semi analyst, you know. But you know, a very significant part of their workload is actually run on Amazon's own, like, you know, chips.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the trend. All the big boys in the cloud, they try to customize their own, you know, build their own chips and the GPU, CPU, yeah.
That makes sense because like Amazon's got really big data centers, them, Microsoft. So it makes sense if you were running your own data center that you'd want to have your own product that you can put in there.
Vertical integration.
That way you can run your workload more. You can optimize your workload, you know, from the hardware, from the chip level to the software level. That's what's mm-hmm. going on in this, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's how things are getting so powerful. That's also another reason we like Marvell. You know, Marvell is actually the guy who can help, you know, all those boys and companies to do their customized, you know, chips.
Oh, is that different than the Marvel Universe, the movies?
Yeah.
Okay. Disney owns said them. That. I was like, wait a minute, is he talking about?
Disney owns them.
Okay, that makes more sense. So is that sort of like the Xilinx acquisition that AMD made? Like you're talking about the configurable chips?
No, it's not like that. It's they just help, like, you know, hyperscalers customize their own, like, you know, chips.
Uh-huh.
Now like FPGA, that's a different you know product.
Okay,
it's more like ASICs and also ARM based stuff.
I was looking through your website on Esoterica and noticed all the resources that you offer. There's a whole bunch of white papers. There's libraries. You do monthly investment letters. Oh, I was wondering if you could speak to some of the things that you guys post on there and why you do it.
Well, you know, mentioned earlier, we want to serve like, you know, retail investors, and having the a good high quality product is just part of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, you know, do the proper investor education. That's how you build the trust. And by the way, you know, the team here is really like into research, and I think that's our DNA. So we try our best, you know, just sharing what we have learned in the process, how we think about the market, from both the top down and bottom up, you know, because, you know, this, mm-hmm. We analyze companies, is particular growth companies, but at the same time, that's one thing I think we're very differentiated from other like growth managers. We pay a lot of attention to the global macro as well. And, because two things really go together.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to manage both the process. So, you know, then we just try our best and share our thoughts. And we post as much as we can.
I was reading through your monthly investment letter. One of the things from the most recent one in April, you mentioned the title here is the Fed has a neutral rate problem. Could you speak more to what that means?
Okay.
Because they don't seem like they're neutral. It seems like they're increasing.
So first of all, like a neutral rate. So that's it actually, it means something.
Mm-hmm.
That's the policy rate, Fed thinks, and it's neither, accommodative nor, restrictive.
Okay.
That's what that means, That's where Fed wants to go. That's the right, mm-hmm. Interest rate we should be able to have. And now it feels to us, in that monthly letter, it's a little bit like too technical sometimes. And so we share some charts, mm-hmm. and that helps people to understand what that means. But at the end of the day, Fed has their dot plot, and there is a longer run dot plot. That's where Fed thinks, neutral rate should be.
Mm-hmm.
And the market also has their market implied neutral rate. That's just how market is pricing in this. Historically speaking, and the market is just using Fed's guidance, that dot plot, longer run, neutral rate, as a guidance, as an anchor,
mm-hmm.
and never really like seriously challenge it. But this time around, and the market, especially coming into April, the one we got bad inflation prints, and one people like James Bullard and John Williams came to the market telling people, okay, we need to do more.
Right.
We need to do 75 bips hikes. Although later on, our chairman dismissed it, but that did scare the market, and market were not sure. And if they should follow the Fed's guidance,
mm-hmm.
and if even get the Fed knows where the neutral rate is, if that possible, actually that's even now I think people, that's a back and forth. That's where the in our mind, that's the biggest risk we have, in the market so far. Market starts to challenge the Fed. If you look at this market implied neutral rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's technically speaking, that's the OIS five year forward. It has gone beyond what the Fed has guided,
mm-hmm.
and that's really spooked the market. Why the April we felt so miserably because because of that, the REITs market have been challenging this assumption. And you see the REITs market has huge volatilities,
mm-hmm.
and we have a long belief, interest rate, especially neutral rate, is the anchor to the valuation. It's the anchor, really the anchor to the valuation of all the risky assets, credit, or equities, commodities.
Mm-hmm.
So when your anchor is volatile, is up and down so much, that volatility is got spilled over and amplified. So that's why what we saw. In April, even into the first 2 weeks of May. And I think that's what's going on in the market space. We have to wait until, market either feel comfortable with this neutral rate assumption provided by the Fed,
mm-hmm.
or maybe don't get surprised, in June, Fed might has to adjust up their neutral rate assumption.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the block, this I actually mentioned that in the monthly letter, Neil Kashkari, right? And he used to be the dovish person on the committee.
Uh-huh.
He started challenging his own estimate of a neutral rate.
Oh.
To me, that scares the market, right?
what?
Yeah, that's not good.
No, look at his blog on the, on their website. And so I think that in the grand scheme of things, that's what's going on. That's why April, even in the first 2 weeks of May, we felt so miserable.
How much faith do you think people still have that the Fed knows what they're doing after the way they, after spending a year calling inflation transitory?
I know. And they made a mistake last year. And, to their credit, they realized the problem, I think that's after September, the fourth quarter, I think, in that last year,
mm-hmm.
they realize this, especially when they see this, ECI index really, accelerating. And the Fed realized that they made a mistake. They tried to fix it quickly. They did, actually. And that's why they were so aggressive since the November.
Mm-hmm.
And the market has responded, right? Because all the growth names started, rolling over last November. And this year, January, coming into January, they accelerated. They became even more aggressive. I don't think a lot of people were saying, oh, Fed is so behind the curve. I don't think so. I think Fed has caught up. Mm-hmm. And things just, you know, took time to work out.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like, you know, given what's going on in Ukraine, Russia, and given, you know, even China throw that into the equation, and you just don't have visibility. There isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have, like, the Fed is playing this game too, you know, they tighten and see how that goes. If, you know, they tighten too much, which is good, they control the inflation. Like I say, like, everybody is talking about a soft landing. You know, like, there's no point of talking about a soft landing. They just keep, you know, Fed made it so clear. Inflation is the top priority.
Yes.
They're going to keep pricing on it and, you know, try to control it and hiking. Until they feel comfortable, you know, inflation is under control. If we were lucky before, you know, inflation really, you know, got into under control before, you know, we got hit a recession. We're lucky. We got a soft landing, or, you know, we're going to go to a hard landing for sure. You know, it's just a matter of luck, you know, how lucky we are. But I think, you know, we should be prepared, and we're going to run into a recession.
So you don't think that they waited too long to act aggressively?
They waited a bit long, but I think after that, they did pretty well. They ramp up the hiking, you know, be as aggressive they can. And now I don't think they are behind the curve anymore. We actually, if you look at our March newsletter, we tried to argue that Fed is no longer behind the curve.
I do like what else you said too. The Fed has blunt weapons, not surgical tools.
Yeah.
No. So, like, why bother, right? Talking about soft landing on a, even like Jay Paul, right? Like last Friday, he came out, even he said he's not sure we're going to get a soft landing or not. It really depends, you know, depends on how, like, inflation is, how quickly we can control the inflation. Yeah. But one thing I want to point out, though, this time around, our economy, the households, the corporates, you know, mm-hmm. are really healthy, and we have to admit that. And the labor market is insanely healthy, and too healthy, mm-hmm. you know. So it wouldn't hurt to let, like, the labor market cool down a little bit.
That makes sense. Why I saw the article saying that. B of A analysts were saying that Powell wants basically a corporate hiring freeze.
That's true. Amazon start finally, you know, like, you know, you if you follow Amazon's earnings, they stopped hiring. Because last 2 years, they spent so much money hiring everybody, building their, like, you know, logistic infrastructure, which is a good thing. But, you know, they have done too much. Now it's a good sign, you know, they stopped hiring. And yeah. You know, in my wildest dream, this time around, and the Fed is being so aggressive,
mm-hmm.
They're going to make Europe, make it China, all the emerging market get into a recession, but the U.S. should be fine.
You don't think we're going to have a recession, at least this year?
Even we have one, it's going to be a very, very minor one.
Mm-hmm.
Even we have one, it's going to be a very minor one, just because the underlying strength is there. It's for real. Yeah.
Because we did have the latest GDP numbers were...
That's a misunderstanding by the market, you know.
Okay.
No, the underlying is what you know. It's trade, you know, and it's the inventory parts making this, you know, GDP growth. It looks really bad, like, negative. But all the, like, consumptions, what the things that really matter, consumptions, business investment, they look insanely very, very healthy. I'm not worried at all.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it from, we actually analyzed GDP report, like, really thoroughly. Because, you know, although that's backward looking, but that really can tell you a lot of information. And you can really see this shift from the goods to services. And, you know, from a different angle. I'm actually very happy with the GDP report. It tells everything about the where we are at this moment. Yeah.
You're not worried about the supply chains staying slow affecting the growth going forward?
If anything, you know, supply chain issues, you know, that's not like affecting our growth that much. That has much bigger impact on the inflation part. I actually would like to, mm-hmm. you know, I would like our growth to slow down a bit more and let it, you know. let the supply and demand become more balanced and to help on the inflation problem. If anything, at this point, giving QQQ has been done QQQ has pricing in a recession already, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to have a minor recession to make everything reset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you smooth out everything and we go back on the right track. I don't like what we have right now. It just feels like, you know, you're so twisted, you know, it's not working smoothly. You, for whatever reasons, now we need a recession to a certain extent to sort things out. Then we get back onto, you know, much healthy growth track.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the charts, I don't know how into technical analysis you are, but just looking at the explosion from after those lows in March 2020, mm-hmm. and how much we've risen up without a real significant pullback. I mean, this is the first significant pullback from those highs.
Yeah.
But it definitely feels scary. The way they were selling off over the last week and a half has looked pretty frightening.
It is, you know, we, especially for growth manager like ourselves, because a lot of like SaaS names, for example, I believe like some people, we didn't do that analysis, but some of our friends did.
Mm-hmm.
I think on average, like no matter you're a very good quality, high quality company or not, your stock like down more than like 50%.
Right.
Yeah. In the SaaS space.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how severe this, you know, correction has been.
Yeah, growth has, and it's really weird the way the markets have been lately, where it seems like there's five or six names that are holding up each main index. So like the SPY may only be down, you know, 20% or so from the highs, or 25 or whatever it is. But like when over like half the companies are down more than 50% from their highs too, that make that up. That doesn't make sense.
we started with the rotation, kind of like you rotate out of a growth into value, right? That was the first, I think the first quarter, that's the theme.
Mm-hmm.
I think we gradually, you know, we get into the second stage of this thing, you know, capitulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually waiting for the value stocks, you know, to drop.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the whole market is waiting for.
Yes.
And once they started like a capitulate,
then we can finally get some buying.
Yeah, we see the real bottom of the market, and hopefully by then, you know, the inflation is also under control. That's where my if you have to ask me today,
mm-hmm.
I'm really looking at the second half of this year. I think we are gonna see the bottom of the whole the true bottom of the whole market,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully inflation is also back, you know, back under control, and the Fed doesn't have to be as aggressive as they are today, and because the market has priced in very, very aggressive Fed.
Right.
If there's any sign, you know, Fed doesn't have to be that aggressive, we're gonna get a very healthy, you know,
right,
rally. That's where the new cycle starts.
Very true. What about with the qualitative easing, or the, what's the one for the actual reduction of the assets?
Tightening. Balance sheet reduction. Yeah.
I mean, with as much money as they pumped into the market since 2008, I think the 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
If they start pulling that out, what sort of effect do you think that that's going to have on the markets?
First of all, put things into perspective. Fed has only done that once, right? You know, last like a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
I believe like they started like a 2018 and did it until like 2019. Then we ran into this, you know, if you still remember, repo market crisis.
Oh, yes.
And you know, that's equity guys may not like pay attention, but if you're a rich guy, you're in the credit market. So like you know, I forgot, like September or October 2019, we ran into that problem. That's mainly because of like the QT.
Mm-hmm.
They had done that, you know, too aggressively, and that Fed realized the problem. They stopped the QD and they fixed the problem. So that's the only, you know, time they done that. So this time around, you know, they changed their like strategy a little bit. First of all, they became more aggressive. Second, they started doing this a lot earlier than last time.
Mm-hmm.
And they have done some research and claiming this is good for, like, you know, keep the curve, you know, treasury curve, like, most steeper.
Mm-hmm.
And which you because nobody likes a flattening curve, right? But you know, that's all research. We just don't know.
That's just a straight line.
Yeah. We just don't know how this is going to work out. And so that's why the Fed is going to be very, I think they're going to be very, you know, careful and see how that goes. And I'll be very surprised that they just, you know, they're going to just push very bluntly, in terms of the QT.
Have they said if they're going to be actively reducing the balance sheet, or are they just letting assets expire?
So far, you know, the message we have heard, like from the latest FOMC meeting, actually on the treasury part, they are not going to actively selling. But for the MBS and the mortgage-backed security portfolio, I don't think they. I think they still keep that option open. That's my takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, let's leave that to later because we don't know.
Well, you can speculate all you want. As soon as the next meeting comes around, it could all change. But and it's fun to speculate.
Yeah.
And if you're right, then you can point to this recording and tell all your friends about how smart you are.
Right.
But the tricky thing is here. I think there's some misunderstanding there, guys. A lot of people, when you're talking about the QT, a lot of people, you know, there is implication on the asset side of the Fed's balance sheet.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if people have done a lot of good research, it's really about the liability side of the, you know, central bank's balance sheet that actually matters for the, you know, risky market.
Oh.
The guy from Citigroup and Matt King, I like his research a lot, and he has had a quite a very interesting, you know, take on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's this is reserves. It's really the size of the reserves or the marginal change of the reserves is going to has been, you know, affecting the equity returns.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we mentioned that in our April monthly letter, the last section. We now also have a new framework. I call it a quantity factor. And but you know, it's not only QT has an impact on that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a many other factors. You know, how much money like a treasury is going to leave on a Fed's balance sheet. It's how all the money market fund, how they are going to use this, you know, reverse repo facility at the central bank.
Mm-hmm.
All those things are going to have impact on the eventual the change of this, you know, reserve. And so it becomes actually a very tricky thing. It's not only about QT. So that's the message I'm trying to, you know, give to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only about QT. Actually, treasuries, you know, has a much bigger role to play to decide, you know, how this quantity factor is going to affect the equity returns.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, you know, next time, hopefully, next month, you guys can see our like a monthly letter.
Right.
And we're going to keep, you know, following that. Yeah.
And that's on the Esoterica Capital website?
Yep, under the resources.
Yes, it is.
It sounds like you spend most of your time doing fundamental analysis on macroeconomic environments.
Well, we do, yeah. You know, here we got a team of six, actually. We have like six analysts, myself included. I'm the portfolio manager, but, you know, I'm more coming from the top-down approach. I pay more attention to the macro like themes and risk premium and like which part of the market you would like to take risk. And the other analysts are more focusing on, you know, different sectors, semiconductors, software, internet, you know, so on and so forth. So that's how we, you know, that's our investment process.
I'm looking at the other people because I think we were looking at maybe scheduling something for the... Who is it? Wei Wang, I think, is the one who does the focus on semiconductors.
Yang is the one is focusing. Oh, some of our new analysts are, you know, yeah, you don't see them on our website yet. We need to update that.
I notice here you have a chief scientist of artificial intelligence and big data.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's we use like that's an old project we used to have. You know, we try to incorporate that, but you know. Unfortunately, we stopped that project. You know, that's too much burden for a small shop like us. It needs much more investment than what we can afford at this point. So now that's we kind of like stopped that, you know, hopefully if we grow bigger, we bring that back.
We're always excited about learning about AI and how people are trying to incorporate it into, you know, market strategies or investment strategies.
I know. We tried that, you know, like at the beginning of this whole thing. We really tried to use AI and big data to figure out, you know, the whole like a semi supply chain.
Ah.
And hopefully we can, you know, try to, that's how we approach it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to be honest with you guys, data is so expensive. and also, you know, you pay big bucks on those things and you are not sure if you can get anything out of it. So.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we have done, we tried a couple of months and then later, you know, we realized this is too much for us to carry on. So we kind of like stopped it, you know. Let's see. Hopefully going forward, we get another chance.
You mentioned a few different times that you're striving to help the retail crowd, the smaller investor. Like, what are some of the things that you wish retail investors knew? Like if you could put out material that you know that everyone would read who wants to be an investor, what would you give them?
That's actually a very good question. So I actually, you know, if in our library, we try to lay out some very fundamental like techniques or tools retail investors can use. Like for example, having a portfolio perspective rather than just trading stocks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you do your own asset allocation. And, you know, I know a lot of people started like a decent, like a 60-40 portfolio. And, but I still believe, you know, for any retail investors, they should have, they should start with asset allocation framework rather than just, you know, really getting into picking stocks.
Mm-hmm.
I think in long run, that goes a long way. Well, you know, then just keep learning all the basic stuff. And I don't think investment, you know, is hard, but I think that's a skill everybody has to have going forward. Very few people have like DB plans these days, right? So you have to manage your own retirement funds.
Right.
I used to manage like Dow Chemicals, you know, DB plans.
Wow, that's a big fund.
It is. I don't think, you know, younger generations, especially. You know, most of corporates don't offer that, you know, benefits anymore.
Not really, no.
So the most you have is the 401k, but still you need to manage your own, like, you know, investments. So start learning all the basics. And this is not like, you don't need a fancy stuff. You don't need a, like, you know, PhD. You don't even need an MBA for this, right? But stick to the basics. And I think that's going to be very helpful. And keep it simple. That's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it simple. Those are the things that when we are, at least I'm writing stuff, I try to think from their perspective, if they can understand this and they can, at least, you know, they don't need to become like market, you know, experts, but at least they get like, you know, the gist of the whole thing and
right.
Feel comfortable like using our products.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest with you, I think for most, you know, retail investors, they should stay away from picking stocks.
Right.
Leveraging the ETF. Those are the very helpful tools, you know. Just buy the QQQ, buy the SPY. I think they don't have to buy WGI. But I'll appreciate it if they buy. But, you know... If, you know,
that's something Dan and I have said for years too. Like we, after, you know, almost 2 years of doing this, finally realized like how much work is actually in it. So anytime somebody asks us,
yeah,
or like they want to get into it, it's like just buy the SPY.
Because
just buy the SPY and then learn.
Yeah, I tell them to pick an industry they think is going to be around in 10 to 20 years and find an ETF for that one.
Yeah. Also, like, that's something people in this country, I mean, in the United States, they didn't realize how lucky they are.
Mm-hmm.
They have such a very, very healthy financial market. Because U.S. market is probably the only one market that delivers, like, a very healthy, you know, risk premium. Which means if you take risk, you get paid.
Right.
So buy and hold actually works. Like, this is not true for many other countries, many other, like, markets. Emerging markets, like China, like, you know, even Taiwan, even Japanese markets.
Yeah,
That doesn't work that way. Because they don't have a very healthy, like, you know, their equity markets don't have this much, like, risk premium. So if those are the, like, the only options you have. You have to trade a little bit. You have to time in the market a little bit. Otherwise, you get screwed. Buy and hold doesn't work for them. But the people here are so lucky. You know, they don't realize how lucky they are.
That's because the one area we are lacking is in education, in that you think that in high school they do some sort of financial education, but there's just nothing. Is that something they do over in Asia?
Well, when I was, like, I did my high school back in Asia, so I didn't learn that either. So
so that's kind of a common theme.
It is a common thing. I think investment education is lacking everywhere. And
yes.
But that's good. People like us, we want to do more. We should do more. And I think we are doing the right thing.
For sure.
Yes.
I really like what you guys are doing. The more I've looked through your website, the more impressed I've been.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Hopefully, you know, we get more resources. We grow bigger. We can do more.
Dan, do you have anything else you want to ask? I think we're starting to run up on our time here.
No, this has been fantastic. I really, really have enjoyed your insights into the economies and the markets.
Thank you very much, guys. And I appreciate that. Hopefully this is can be helpful for your audience as well.
Okay. I think so. Where can the people find you?
Well, come to our website and also come to our LinkedIn, and we posted our stuff there. We try to be more, active on social media. I know we need to do more on Twitter. And people actually can find me on Twitter too.
I'll make sure I add you before we're done here. The website is esoterica.cap, no spaces. Yeah. And then the LinkedIn, all the other stuff. We'll make sure we have links in that in the episode description so everybody can find that easily.
And check out their ETF, WUGI.
5G in Chinese.
5G, yeah. That makes it easy, Kyle. Good.
I assume the Wu is 5.
Yeah, that's very true.
Okay. So I learned two words today, or at least a word on a letter.
There you go. Baby steps.
Right. Well, Bruce, we're really happy to have you with us. I'm glad you made time and were able to.
Thank you for having me, guys. I apologize for the internet.
Oh, no, it's no problem at all. Hopefully we can get some more people from your team on. I know we were working with Wendy to try to get the other fellow.
Yeah.
The
Young.
Yeah.
Semiconductors expert.
Young used to work at Alliance Bursting with me, and he's covering the global semi like 10 years, and he has a lot of things to offer, I think. And if you guys happen to run a semi overview or podcast, and I think he's the right guy.
And, I think that'd be a great one to do.
Yeah, both in US and Asia, China. And really, see like how things are going on two ends. And I think that's a lot of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be helpful. We also have a China policy analyst.
Oh.
He actually just graduated this year from Harvard Kennedy School. And
okay.
Based in Boston right now. And we have done a lot of like China policy research. And, those are the things we could contribute as well. Yeah.
Well, before you run off, then maybe we should ask you, what are your thoughts on the threats of the delisting happening, potential delisting of the Chinese stocks from the U.S. markets? Do you think that will actually happen? Or
hold on, let me get my popcorn.
Well, it really depends on this auditing stuff, and I think two countries are working on it, but we just don't know how the progress is. But one thing I wanted, that's my conviction. Even delisting doesn't happen, and the Chinese firms are gonna follow the rules, come to US, get listed here. But I think the new companies coming to the market, I don't think ADR is their top choice anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna get more listed in Hong Kong, and so that I mean the ADR game has changed for good. No matter how this delist thing are gonna work out,
you're the second person to tell us the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, well, hopefully we are right.
Yeah. But, Harold Vanderlind from HSBC, he's their chief Asia equity strategist, and he was saying the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, for example, ByteDance, you know, the parent company of the, you know, TikTok. Mm-hmm. There was a long rumor being out there for a long time. They are seeking ways to get, you know, listed, go public. And, you know, just think about, like, how much TikTok is going to worth, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know how they are going to do their IPOs, and because a lot of, like, rumors out there. But, you know, I think their primary target, or they're only allowed to get, you know, listed in Hong Kong. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if that's their choice. You know, things like that, you know, the companies, really high growth, high quality companies, I think their primary, you know, listed, you know, place is going to go to Hong Kong. That's my opinion.
It would not surprise me after speaking to all the other experts who said the exact same thing.
Yep.
Not my own thoughts. I just hear everybody else saying that.
Yeah.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining us. We'll let you get back to your thing. You probably get your day is ready to start now since it's, I think, morning over there for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, guys. And it's a lot of fun to do this with you guys.
Well, good. Good. Maybe next time we'll prepare a fun game for you.
There you go.
Right. Dan, you want to wrap us up?
All right, folks. Thanks for sticking around to the end. We want to thank you once again, Dr. Bruce from Esoterica Capital. And sadly, we do have to end the episode, but we will be back at you soon with another exciting adventure. Until then, happy trades.
Bye, folks.
Thank you, guys.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.